Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
I am the working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's lovely to be with you on this, whatever day it is.
Somebody, Elijah's beard.
Stop saying that. There's no reason for that to be still going on. All right. Here's what we got going on the program this evening. There are a couple Ask the Pastor-ish questions.
Yes.
I'm going to propose it, and then you tell me whether I'm thinking about it correctly.
Okay.
The first one is... what is there any value in reading the Apocrypha?
Yes.
Okay. Looking for value in that, recognizing that, like, I know that it's not as like accepted because of how much as far as I know, because of how many manuscripts have these things, how contested it is that this was actually the words that they were supposed to be, all the different stuff.
Yep.
But is there value in recognizing those truths while also taking in culturally and what those mean and what those words say? So,
okay. Got it. And then secondly, there's a question at the end of Kings, some prophecy from, is it Micaiah?
Micaiah. Yeah. Right.
Micaiah. Okay. So, it brings up a concept of a deceitful spirit.
Yeah, deceitful spirit that's being sent essentially from this like war council style thing with the Lord that ends up going like, I'm going to go to these other prophets and I'm going to speak a lying tongue to them so that these prophets speak incorrectly.
Yep.
To Ahab, who then ends up going and getting killed. That's weird. That's funky.
Yep. Okay.
And then the other piece, if we have the time for it, is essentially like Micaiah responds to these servants of Ahab that are sent to him and asking for him to like discern the words of the Lord. And he goes, you know, this dude has only spoken ill of me is what Ahab says. And so I don't like him that much. And so when Micaiah is confronted and asked to come out, the servant basically goes like, hey, how do we know you're going to say good things? And he goes, I will only speak what the Lord says to me. And then the first thing he says is a lie. He goes, yes. You should totally go out to this battle, for you will win, and all of the battle will be won for you. And then Ahab is like, do you swear that that's what you heard? And then he goes, No, I actually saw all of Israel bowed down and scattered amongst the hills dead. And all the, like, he tells the true prophecy, which is like, you are going to lose this battle. Yeah. You will die. Your blood will be licked up in the same place that the dude that you just killed him and took his vineyard is going to be dead. Like, it's crazy. So like, he lies.
Yeah.
He goes against what he says he's going to do. That's hard for me to take in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's the two. That's the two parts of that I have questions on.
Okay.
It's the end of 1 Kings.
Yeah. All right. Well, these are good questions. A couple other things from the news that I wanted to hit. There's a church. It's always in Texas. That's always where these churches are at.
They're the big ones.
It's always the big ones in Texas where this kind of thing is happening. But basically, they got a dude on staff who was on America's Most Wanted.
Dude on staff who was on America's Most Wanted. Okay.
Yeah. And so there's some concern about whether he should be able to have what is a leadership or influential position within the church.
Mm. Okay.
But I don't know. I think the details matter on this one. And
okay.
So we'll walk through it. And we'll kind of get your thoughts and reactions.
Yeah. All right.
The second one was, and this is becoming less timely, I'm going to acknowledge this. And I tell you what, especially any news item that even had a passing reference to old Donald J. Trump. Like,
sure.
I mean, you give it one or two news cycles, something else has happened of which has brought your attention.
Sure.
But there was just like a pretty significant kerfuffle around the prayer that happened at his prayer breakfast after he was on his inauguration.
Okay.
And it was because, given the conservative folks on my old social media feed, that this person has like significantly overstepped their bounds as a pastor. It is a lady. This woman has said at least some inflammatory things toward Donald Trump in the past. But as I would encourage you always to do from just a discernment perspective is like the more liberal folks on my page were like, she was just doing what a pastor should do and calling for the defense of the defenseless. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, kind of sounds right. And then the more conservative folks were like, she significantly overstepped her bound. It was uncalled for, and we've never been such an abomination come from a pastor on a prayer breakfast. I can't believe it.
Holy cats. Okay.
Okay. Well, what did she say though? And so,
right.
So what I wanted to do was, I'm going to read what she said. Mm. And I'm just kind of curious as we listen, like, raise your hand where you disagree.
Yeah, sure.
Because bless them, but the folks at the, I think it's in the United Kingdom actually just posted the transcript, which I'm like, yeah, okay, that's what I wanted. I don't need someone else's interpretation of what happened. And so I'm just kind of curious though, if you're looking for it or if you're not looking for it, like what do certain things hit you differently in this context? So
this will be perfect because I have zero idea what you're talking about.
Okay, good. Good. So yeah, we'll see.
I know what you're talking about, but I've not read the transcript. So.
Okay. So we'll see how it hits.
We're in various stages of unknowing.
And we'll also do a advice on Dear Life from the Path. Mike, did you preview any of these things?
Yeah.
Are they any good?
Yeah, they're solid.
Okay, they're going to be great.
I don't trust that at all.
I will tell you one thing. I'm often not disappointed when I say, hey, you should call the complaint line because, like, I understand why you didn't call the complaint line. You probably didn't listen to the program. And then how could you call? You can't be held responsible. And so I'll tell you why I was disappointed, though, because the last time we had a program, the thing you were supposed to call the complaint line on was, what were you going to name your baby that you got talked out of, but it was a sweet name?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, there's going to be some cool names on the complaint line.
Not a one.
And you lazy loafers, you non-goal setting, 2025, I'll just let the spirit do what it wants type of people. Nobody called the complaint line and said, I tried to name my kid Diphtheria Thompson. And my wife talked me out of it. Like, I got none of these stories, and I was really, really disappointed.
There's not one person out there who wanted to name their child Battle. Come on.
Yeah.
You Southern weirdos. Yeah. Come on.
You spell it like
the battle, B-A-T-T-L-E. Yes.
Yeah. Scrabble.
It's legit, like, in the South. I know somebody whose grandpa's name's Battle.
Batil.
Like, deep South, like Kentucky.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
So anyway. Like Kentucky South.
Is that not South? That's South.
It's pretty South. It's not South.
It's not South South.
There's like two
Mid South at least.
It.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's the nipple of the South.
Gross. I hate you. I'll be driving to Kentucky in like a few weeks. That makes no sense.
That's not even partial. Like belly button of the South, maybe.
That's pretty South.
Where's the nipple of the country?
Yeah, so belly button of the South is Kentucky, so then Tennessee makes sense to be the belt. Right. And then you just get to like Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi, and then you're.
No, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi are the belly button. That's the lower part.
No, the lower part.
That's South.
Very obviously Florida.
That's the South.
Like the shape of a peninsula gives. Anyway.
If people say I'm from down South, I never think you mean Florida.
Hey, if I say the word archipelago, do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just checking. Anyway.
Isn't going. That the guys who go do up? Doop-a-doop-a-doop.
I hate him so much. I hate him so much.
Okay, here we go. Lifetime registered sex offender, once on America's Most Wanted, leads church in Texas.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Does it matter? This is, first of all, I just want to clarify. The fact that he's a lifetime registered sex offender, it goes in bucket one. Whether he got chosen for the program to be on America's Most Wanted or not seems...
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Was his crime just of a high entertainment value?
Yeah.
Hopefully not from the first string of statements in the sex offender list, but
that's
still.
That's a good point. That's more of a lottery.
Yeah.
Whether you made the TV.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
The funniest things that have ever happened in the world aren't just what ended up on America's Funniest Home Videos.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Here we go.
Anyway, here we go. Chuck Adair, a lifetime registered sex offender who was once listed on America's Most Wanted for running off with an underage parishioner.
Oh, boy.
That's okay. There we go.
Okay.
Is now a ministry leader at Grace Place Church of Christ in Duncanville, Texas, and a part-time staffer with Watermark Community Church in Dallas.
Two churches.
Two, yeah, double. This is a dangerous predator, warned survivor advocate Amy Smith in a video shared on X on January 1st. He should not have a position of leadership as a pastor. He was not being truthful about keeping away from children. In a recent statement addressing Adair's work with the church, Watermark elders Todd Anders, I don't care what their names are, has said that he's been an active member of the church since 2017 and does both volunteer and paid work with their prison ministry. They also stated that Adair does not work with minors and their relationship with him is guided by care and common sense. Said Mr. Adair was convicted in 1996 and completed his community supervision in 2006. Mr. Adair has been an active member of Watermark since 2017. He volunteers in our prison ministry and with Watermark's adult recovery ministry, where he occasionally teaches. So this is the curious part to me. Mm-hmm. Like, if you said, hey, he was the pastor of the church, no.
Right.
Obviously
right.
not.
Yes, agreed.
No, he's out. But he does prison work.
Yeah. Which I think is a great spot for him.
And the recovery ministry.
Which I also think is a great spot for him.
And so, does it matter? Like, do the details matter here?
Yeah, kind of. What parts he get paid for?
Let's see what he is.
That is fair. That's a good question.
Well, here's some more background on him. Adair, who is now 62, was convicted of sexual assault of a child and sentenced to 10 years in prison in 1996. That conviction came after he initiated a sexual relationship with a girl he met in his youth group while working for Garnet Church of Christ in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1990. I can't justify it, Adair told the Dallas Morning News in 2012, because it is inappropriate at every level. He would eventually leave that church to join Golf Course Road Church of Christ in Midland, Texas.
Jeez.
This is where he would meet Kristen Berryhill when she was just 13 in 1992. The girl frequently visited his house, where he told his then wife, Missy, that he was just counseling the girl. Berryhill's parents questioned the nature of Adair's relationship with their daughter in 93, and in 94, when she turned 15, he admitted that others began to notice that he and the young teenager were a little too close. To avoid getting fired, he resigned from Golf Course Road Church of Christ in December of 1994, told the Dallas Morning News that he begged for forgiveness and planned to stop seeing the underage teen, but he eventually began having sex with her. He absconded with the 15-year-old, and an alert was issued on America's Most Wanted. He was arrested after just 11 days on the run in May 95 at a Las Vegas motel. After his conviction in 96, Adair went on to marry his victim in 98 when she turned 18. While he was in prison, he was 38. The marriage only lasted for 2 years. Berryhill, who claimed her relationship with Adair was consensual, divorced him in 2000. Prior to being paroled in 2005 and returning to Dallas, Adair received sex offender treatment.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't say exactly which of those things he's getting paid for. Like, I think it's the regeneration.
The recovery one.
He's listed as a pastor. Hold on. Let me see here. Let's see here. Yeah, in a statement responding to his acceptance of the plea deal, blah, 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 we don't care. Yeah, I thought it also had said one time, like what exactly he had, like some of the boundaries around his ministry work or something like that. But I think the core concern is, I think he's listed as a pastor on their website or something. But it's a pastor of a ministry of which, at least they're saying, does not have minor contact. And it seems to relate in some ways to his past criminal history, of which ministry you should be ministering to people.
Okay, first reaction. Calling him a pastor does feel weird to me.
Okay, yep.
Admittedly.
Yep.
Like, if it said he volunteers in prison ministry and adult recovery, I'd be like, heck yeah, great job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super excited that you're following Christ and that, like, you've turned your life around. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I totally understand why people are going pastor, like leader.
Yeah.
Leader in this situation. I'm totally for him being involved, 100%. He absolutely has his value in the kingdom.
Yep.
And can mover and shaker, undoubtedly. Eyebrows, elbows.
Yep.
I feel weird about that dude in leadership. Like, leading, being the head of a leadership situation, I guess. I don't know. I don't even know if that's right.
I'm not.
It hits me weird.
I'm not conflicted in the way that I feel about this. I think he should have not the word pastor at his name.
Okay, yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because there's no reason for it. Right?
You could lead a ministry and not be a pastor.
You could lead a ministry. You can teach and not be a pastor. You don't have to be paid. Like, you shouldn't have a spiritual authority or a vote. Like, the thing is like on a flat level, right? Like, none of this is that big of a deal, but that's not how it works in those churches, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a pastor, you get a vote.
Yes, right.
And if you're a pastor, then you make decisions based on whatever.
You get freedoms in that and accesses in that.
Correct. And especially in like, any public church, right? Like, if you have the word pastor by it, people put you in a certain esteem and a certain trust level that, like, I am totally on board with the fact that God can redeem and bring that to what it is. But the problem is his crime happened in a church.
Yeah.
Right. Like with a child.
With a child, right? And like, it's not like he, like, I fell in temptation, so I quit being a youth leader, and I got out of that church, and I doubled down with my wife, and I became a shoemaker.
Right.
None of that happened.
He quit the church and then stayed with the gal and literally went on the run with the teenager.
Yes. Like as soon as that, first of all, it doesn't matter whether he's dealing with youth or not. Youth are a vulnerable people group.
Yes.
Just like single women, just like recovering ministries, you know, unless he's like around dudes only.
Yeah. That's why I love prison ministry.
Right.
I think that's great for him.
I think there is nothing that he is owed in the way of honor coming from a church establishment that has to let this happen. If you took all those titles away from him and he continued to do it on his own, now I'm talking about a man that has been redeemed by Christ and will go to that ministry will be in the prison telling people about who Jesus is, whether he's a pastor of anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah. If I'm in this situation, I think to myself, if the word pastor gets said in the same breath as my name and that drives people away from Jesus, you don't call me that. Never. I don't need it. I don't want it. I'm Troy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that goes into a prison. You especially never need to know my name. All I do is I point you back to Jesus. Wholeheartedly. I would never accept a position like that.
Yeah. I certainly wouldn't pay him. It creates a Billy Graham problem, right? Like whether that money is fine or not fine, it creates a PR problem. The fact that you gave it to him, that's a problem. Right. And so you're like,
what's he doing with the salary they pay him?
Oh, and it doesn't even matter. Let's say he gives it away.
People will ask that.
Yeah. He could totally give it away to homeless people. And that was all be right and good. But the problem is like you basically the church is collecting money on behalf of Yahweh and saying this is how we will pay the bills here. We'll pay the staff here. And you took some of that money and gave it to somebody who perpetuated crimes against a vulnerable people group inside the building.
Yeah.
Like there is no nuance where this should feel fine. All of it is because none of it's necessary for that man to do the redemptive work that God has put him on the path to do. If it's honest and it's good, which I got zero reason to think that it ain't.
Right.
That God has not redeemed this man and called him clean and put him out to tell people of his goodness and forgiveness. None of it comes with a worldly honor that is necessary to have.
I just think it creates a huge stumbling block.
Yes, there's no reason to even risk it. Because now what, are you going to defend it against the vulnerable people group?
Yeah.
And be like, I know that you are worried about this, people who've been abused in the past, but I'm going to tell you why it's all right.
Yeah.
Stop.
And you do not need that title to understand that you have been redeemed by Christ. You do not need something about your name being on a website or a pamphlet or having the word behind it or in front of it, anything like that, that says, oh, this is the final mark that God is promising me that because I ran to him and I've been saved by his son's blood, I'm redeemed.
Yeah.
I get to go. No one on this planet gets to take that away from me as long as I know I'm close to my father and I profess the name of Christ and done that thing, right? And then, therefore, I refuse to let anything that is a part of my identity at this point be a stumbling block for others.
So I could see how a church got here innocently, except for the paying part. That part I'm struggling with, right? Unless, let's say the prison goes, look, we don't just let anybody in here to start running their yap. You need to be a pastor of your religious order.
Yep.
And it needs to be a paid position so we know you're not full of crap.
Well, in that case, go with a pastor. I doubt the situation is they can't bring you. Your pastor brings in Mr. Man. Great.
Yeah.
You go in as a team.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is I could see how a church kind of gotten themselves in a pickle here and, you know, didn't think holistically about it. And they're like, ah, crap. But that's not we're still defending it. And we're in two different churches. Yeah. Right. This also sniffs weird to me. You know, I have zero problem with going. I don't think any of this is necessary.
Right.
And in fact, before I put my church congregation and the work of Jesus in this kind of scrutiny, I'd have bowed out of all of it.
Yeah.
They had offered to pay you, I can't accept your money. I'm just a shoe cobbler. That's what I do.
Yes, exactly.
But I will tell you about how great God is.
I'll come with you to the prison.
Yes.
Yeah. Undoubtedly. I'll lead a Bible study in there. Great. Yes.
Yes. Now, the problem is, Paul, participated in murders.
Yes.
Murders, right? Redeemed.
The coats.
Pastor Paul.
right?
Sure, yeah. There's absolutely a reality where there is redemption on the other side of this and good work to be done in the kingdom by one who has repented and is walking in the light of Christ.
Yes.
There's no reality in which we would ever argue with that being a true thing.
Now, to everything that we've just said, though, right, Paul was continually whooped everywhere that he went, like sought no honor of his own.
But that's not true. Actually, he reiterated on a couple of occasions, I call myself an apostle.
Like, true.
So, I mean, like as you guys were talking about the titling of the thing, actually, Paul, in reference to the authority that he believes is included in a part of that distinction, mm-hmm. He actually did... He did insist upon it.
The authority of being called an apostle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not following you.
So the combination of he held coats, participated in murders.
Yeah. Sinful.
Yep. I'm with you so far.
So we let him lead, let him teach. We accept the writings that the Holy Spirit has inspired into him. He had influence over other people. We think that's great. He did. You guys were talking about like the title of pastor. Well, you should just let that go. Paul insisted upon it in places so that people
of apostle, not pastor. This is where I'm getting confused.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. A title of that speaks to his level of influence in the church.
Yeah, I feel like that. I mean, am I getting caught on like we're capital A apostle and he's just like, I'm a guy that was sent by God.
No, that's not what he means. He, in fact, he's insisting that you think about the stuff that he is saying in the same way that you think about the words that the other ones have said. It's when he's making a case to like basically don't dismiss.
Sure. Yeah. Right. I'm saying. Yeah. He sets his credibility. In
I learned from Jesus. Yep. Like they learned from Jesus.
In all realms I can be considered. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So,
okay.
So I say, like there's ways in which that's not a perfect comparison, but like just, as you think about, hey, he doesn't need the title, and why can't he just kind of humbly serve in this way? Like, he actually shares quite a few things with Paul.
But there's something different about Paul's mission in that situation, especially, like, we talked about this on the show a month and a half ago,
yep.
About the kind of things that Paul was doing for the very early church, setting those kind of things, is a very different thing than what this guy is doing. Like, he's going forward, and like, yes, being a disciple for Christ, and as being one that is speaking the true words of God, and I believe he can, but divined by the Spirit, wholeheartedly can do that. Where it hits me weird is, though, that, like, this guy is going in and is accepting a title that in our culture very specifically, like, sets you in a place where you have authority and the ability to, like, speak into people's lives. I guess I'm catching myself in my own words. I'm catching myself in my own words because I see... I guess as I tease out my own argument, I'm standing on shakier ground than I thought I was.
Yeah.
So I see your point.
Paul's tricky. He's very tricky because you would say, but it's part of even his testimony to say the man who was murdering us
mm-hmm.
is willing to sacrifice and die for our safety.
Yeah, I was fully convicted and even on my way to being in the realm of high priest in that situation. And I'm recognizing that I was wrong. I was taken up in the kind of spirit, whether God, I don't know, God knows, into the third heaven. I saw Jesus and heard his voice. He was the one who said, you know, why are you persecuting me, right? I suppose, yes, he makes the arguments, especially because of the realm that he's in, where there are those who have authority who are disagreeing with him. And so, like, he would, in his logical argumentation, say, you cannot go against me just because they have authority and you think that I don't.
Yep.
Now, I have authority and can speak from that point, and therefore my words can ring true.
Now, I do think it's fair to say there are certainly markedly different things going on with Apostle Paul, even though, I mean, murder is still bad for certain, but we have a belief in Paul's life that he has a blindness that would not have been overcome shy of Jesus.
Right.
Like entering the situation and the moment that was realized.
Yeah, right.
Everything changes.
His
for
full
Paul.
Conviction was not a murderer that was going around and heinously killing people for no good reason. He fully believed that he was following and doing the will of Yahweh as it stood in the letter of the law and was going against those who he believed were blaspheming his God.
And that was not the situation with Dr. Touchy over here.
Yeah, with a self-pleasuring old man.
Yeah, right. who is specifically manipulated the influence that was available to him
right.
at a church structure to otherwise delight in things that Paul
yeah,
himself
right.
condemns.
Right. Same redeemer, but very different situation to be redeemed from.
Yeah, so I think that's what makes it tricky is that, like, even as we speak about people who are going back into leadership from in a church after having committed various types of sin, is that Paul was once a murderer and then he got to be a leader is not as clear of a, like, I right. think you can't just go, oh, well then.
Yeah, right. It's not an if then.
Yeah. And so I actually have, I've slightly mixed reaction to this primarily because, like, what we're not saying is that he shouldn't have influence because, like, you're still going to allow him to teach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what you have is you're really saying, yeah, but let's just get rid of the easily triggered reactions from people by pulling his face off the website.
Yeah. Like, this guy never gets to be in a room alone with anybody again. Like, I think that's a fair thing you say.
Oh, they're fine. They're fine with, like, they seem to be okay with that.
Yeah.
They kind of, they expected that. And he's been willful. He's like,
yeah,
sure, whatever. You
right.
tell me whatever the restrictions are, they're great.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Just the whole, I feel most, well, even after this, I feel most convicted about, like, this is just such an obvious stumbling block that is being created for so many people. Like, especially now as it's being nationally publicized that, like, oh, great, look, this is just what the church does. Like, this is, you like, this is blaspheming and dragging the name of Jesus through the mud.
Yeah, so if the but if the resolution says, okay, look, just so people don't misunderstand, we're not going to call him pastor and we're not going to pay him. Otherwise, he gets to serve because he just wants to serve, and he gets to serve in whatever these things are. But still, because he's a registered sex offender, he's not allowed to do
yeah, right.
all the things a sex offender
all
can.
The protections that need to be there that he very obviously seems to be like, yes, I'm in for it.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that maybe slightly catches me is I don't particularly love the fact that if the situation itself was actually fine, you're changing it because people who are not close enough to the situation are causing a ruckus about a situation that they're not near enough to understand.
I mean,
well,
it's probably just as equally fine though without that stuff. It should be. It should be equally fine with or without it. And so, like, why do it with it?
Yeah. Right. I see what you're saying. Like, It's fine on either side of him being called a pastor. And so if it's going to be a problem for him to be called a pastor, just stop being called a pastor.
Yeah. 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 I wouldn't care at all. And
but I get the point of saying that, like, it seems as though people that are not really close enough to this to care about it are going to be reacting to it. I don't think it would have gotten to this point if nobody cared about it that was close by, though. Like, it didn't just get picked up by a national news one day because they found out that this name was similar. Like, I'm sure somebody said something and then it just continued to cycle its way up towards this.
Oh, I don't know about that. There are specific people who, like, spend their lives kind of digging up this kind of thing related to the church. It tends to be like church burnt folk.
Yeah, really? Why you be okay. on staff at two different churches?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, he serves in two different churches, but, like, I think it's because the one has the prison ministry and the one has the recovery ministry. But either way, I actually agree. I just if what feels like it solves the problem is like stop calling him a pastor, stop paying him, and let him serve how he serves within the right context of a guy who shouldn't be around kids. Okay, great.
Yeah,
that should go away. And then the story is dude who was on America's Most Wanted is doing prison ministry. Like, oh, sounds right.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, yeah. Okay. Yep. I see both sides of that.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about this. I'm going to read you what the lady's pastor says. And in reaction to this, President Trump says she was nasty.
Okay.
She said nasty things to me. Okay. Here's a prayer. I don't know. It's kind of a speech, too. Oh, God, you made us in your own image and redeemed us through Jesus, your son. Look with compassion on the whole human family. Take away the arrogance and hatred which infect our hearts, break down the walls that separate us, unite us in bonds of love, and work through our struggle and confusion to accomplish your purposes on earth, that in your good time, all nations and races may serve you in harmony around your heavenly throne, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. So far, so good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems right.
Sounds like, hey, fulfill promises that you've been given to us from the beginning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And everybody should do it. Whole family, right. Every nation.
The whole deal.
Yep, I'm in. I like it so far. Jesus said, everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. Now when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as their scribes. Matthew 7:24-29.
Hard to argue with that.
Yep. Everyone agrees. Joined by many across the country, we have gathered this morning to pray for unity as a nation, not for agreement, political or otherwise, but for the kind of unity that fosters community across diversity and division, a unity that serves the common good. Unity, in this sense, is the threshold requirement for people to live together in a free society. It is the solid rock, as Jesus said, in this case upon which to build a nation. It is not conformity. It is not victory of one over the other. It is not weary politeness nor passivity born of exhaustion. Unity is not partisan.
Huh? Okay.
Yeah,
you could argue that on both sides of that. You could say that to a Republican or a Democratic president.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could. I mean, it feels like a twisting of scripture to say that Jesus's rock is unity.
Yes, I agree. So I think that is a... to say she's associated, like the house is built upon the rock, and for building
just
a nation.
Just stated that the rock is unity. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could actually make this case to say building a nation, unity is the rock, without otherwise making it feel like it is
extrapolating
blessed.
Yeah. I just wouldn't have tied it to Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. That's okay. Not what that verse was talking about.
You could have
about.
Made a philosophical case for
it. Sure.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. Rather, unity is a way of being with one another that encompasses and respects differences, that teaches us to hold multiple perspectives and life experiences valid and worthy of respect, that enables us in our communities and halls of power to generally care for one another even when we disagree. Those across our country who dedicate their lives or who volunteer to help others in times of natural disaster, often at great risk to themselves, never ask those they are helping for whom they voted in the past election or what positions they hold on a particular issue. We are at our best when we follow their example.
This is all during a prayer?
Yeah. Well, no, this is an I think the opening was a prayer, and then here's the extrapolation.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Sorry. It's not that important. I just was making certain I understood.
Yeah. That all seems fine to me. Unity at times is sacrificial in the way that love is sacrificial, a giving of ourselves for the sake of another. Jesus of Nazareth, in his Sermon on the Mount, exhorts us to love not only our neighbors, but to love our enemies and to pray for those who persecute us, to be merciful as our God is merciful, and to forgive others as God forgives us. Jesus went out of his way to welcome those whom his society deemed as outcasts.
Welcome them into following him.
Mm, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. To call him into.
Yeah. Them. Not just.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah. Be as you are.
Right. Because what's right. best for them
welcome
is
them
to
into
be
a change
is to be in line him. With God the Father.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Continue on.
Okay. Now, I grant you that unity in this broad, expansive sense is aspirational, and it's a lot to pray for, a big ask of our God, worthy of the best of who we are and can be.
So just a small, once again, caveat, the unity that God is attempting and his heart is for is to be
unity
under him.
Following him.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
His people.
Which I think does allow for the stuff that she's talking about. You can disagree on certain things.
I agree.
Or,
sure.
Or whatever. Totally. But yes, that's right. But there isn't much to be gained by our prayers if we act in ways that further deepen and exploit the divisions among us. Our scriptures are quite clear that God is never impressed with prayers when actions are not informed by them. Nor does God spare us from the consequences of our deeds, which in the end matter more than the words we pray.
Okay.
Those of us gathered here in this cathedral are not naive about the realities of politics. When power, wealth, and competing interests are at stake, when views of what America should be are in conflict, when there are strong opinions across a spectrum of possibilities and starkly different understandings of what the right course of action is, there will be winners and losers when votes are cast or decisions made that set the course of public policy and the prioritization of resources. It goes without saying that in a democracy, not everyone's particular hopes and dreams will be realized in a given legislative session or presidential term or even a generation. Not everyone's specific prayers, for those who are people of prayer, will be answered as we would like. But for some, the loss of their hopes and dreams will be far more than political defeat, but instead a loss of equality, dignity, and livelihood. Given this, is true unity among us even possible? And why should we care about it? Well, I hope that we care, because the culture of contempt that has become normalized in our country threatens to destroy us. We are all bombarded daily with messages from what sociologists now call the outrage industrial complex, some of it driven by external forces whose interests are furthered by a polarized America. Contempt fuels our political campaigns and social media, and many profit from it, but it's a dangerous way to lead a country. Yeah. I'm good with that so far. I am a person of faith, and with God's help, I believe that unity in this country is possible. Not perfectly, for we are imperfect people and an imperfect union, but sufficient enough to keep us believing in and working to realize the ideals of the United States of America, ideals expressed in the Declaration of Independence with its assertion of innate human equality and dignity. And we are right to pray for God's help as we seek unity, for we need God's help, but only if we ourselves are willing to tend to the foundations upon which unity depends. Like Jesus' analogy of building a house of faith on the rock of his teachings, as opposed to building a house on sand, the foundations we need for unity must be sturdy enough to withstand the many storms that threaten it. What are the foundations of unity? Drawing from our sacred traditions and texts, let me suggest that there are at least three. All right, I'm going to read kind of these three extensively, because otherwise this will take just a little bit too long, and then we can kind of see if you agree with them. One, the first foundation for unity is honoring the inherent dignity of every human being, which is all faith represented here affirm the birthright of all people as children of the one God. In public discourse, honoring each other's dignity means refusing to mock, discount, or demonize those with whom we differ, choosing instead to respectfully debate across our differences and, whenever possible, to seek common ground. If common ground is not possible, dignity demands that we remain true to our convictions without contempt for those who hold convictions of their own.
Okay, I agree with that.
Okay. I think if there's a qualification in here, is actually, if you follow what she's saying, is that we can disagree without demonizing. I think there's often an issue within our country that the very presence of disagreement
creates demonization.
Presumed to be demonization. And so she's made a distinction that is a proper one that I'm not sure is universally acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
A second foundation for unity is honesty in both private conversation and in public discourse. If we aren't willing to be honest, there's no use in praying for unity, because our actions work against the prayers themselves. We might for a time experience a false sense of unity among some, but not the sturdier, broader unity that we need to address the challenges we face. Now, to be fair, we don't always know where the truth lies, and there's a lot of working against the truth now, staggeringly so. But when we do know it is true, it's incumbent upon us to speak the truth, even when, and especially when, it costs us. A third foundation for unity is humility, which we all need, because we are all fallible human beings. We make mistakes. We say and do things that we regret. We have our blind spots and biases, and we are perhaps the most dangerous to ourselves and others when we are persuaded without a doubt that we are absolutely right and someone else is absolutely wrong. Because then we are just a few steps away from labeling ourselves as the good people versus the bad people.
I have to think about that, because like there's some universal truths that are not up for debate.
Right.
And that have to be that it's okay that they are absolutely right. And so,
yeah,
I don't know if that is humility necessarily that says, well, I'm willing to cast doubt and dispersion amongst all things merely so you can say that I have humility.
Right. I'm humble because I recognize that I am fallible, but I can also recognize that there is an infallibility in the absolute truth that is Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like she's made a way to say, look, we can disagree on some things, and here's a path of how we should interact with ourselves.
Sure.
If we do so. This does start to preclude that, like, you can have any absolute reality.
Right. Yeah. All roads lead to him.
Yeah. I do believe, you know, oftentimes our lack of humility in recognizing that there is some bit of truth in. I would almost state it the other way. I think you can it is way more dangerous to say something that someone else says is unequivocally wrong.
Sure.
Because I often find that there's some modicum of truth in things that people believe, even if they believe something different than me. Now, unless they've taken the, like, if I say, hey, there is a loving, holy God, and they go, there is no such thing as a loving, holy God. Okay, we're at odds. But
I think wisdom also tells you that that's coming from a place.
Right. So, but like, I would say humility should say you have your convictions and the things that you believe to be true. People are living in a reality, even if they disagree with some of the foundations of which you have established yours. And so I would be open to the fact that your two things do coexist in some way, even if you're using words that make it seem like they're at each other. They may not be.
That's fair.
Okay. The truth is that we are all people capable of both good and bad. Alexander Soldenstein astutely observed that the line separating good and evil passes not through states, not between classes, nor between political parties, but right through every human heart and through all human hearts. The more we realize this, the more room we have within ourselves for humility and openness to one another across our differences, because in fact, we are more like one another when we realize and when we need each other. Unity is relatively easy to pray for on occasions of solemnity. It is a lot harder to realize when you're dealing with real differences in the public arena, but without unity, we are building our nation's house on sand. With a commitment to unity that incorporates diversity and transcends disagreement, and the solid foundations of dignity, honesty, and humility that such unity requires, we can do our part in our time to help realize the ideals and dream of America.
Okay.
All right, here's the end. Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put, well, up to this, point.
I was just about to say, yeah.
How do we feel? It's okay.
Yeah.
I think there was some things I'd quibble with. Not heavy.
Yeah. And my quibble isn't even the words that she used. It's probably what you just know how people make.
Right. Yeah, totally fair. Yes. This is how I know it will end up in someone's mind.
At face value, I don't really have a problem with any of this at this point.
No, you're right. Like from the ears of. Like people who would automatically put them on either side of a slew of issues, right? Everybody is hearing it the same way and going, yeah, I would be up for unity. It's them that would not.
Yeah.
They do not want to meet me halfway. They don't want to be in unity with me at all. You know, and so like everybody on both sides is of an issue are basically going, yeah, I mean, if you'd agree with me, we'd be in unity.
Inciting it adversarial.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually even think not only would I agree with this, I think they're pretty good. I think they're pretty good advocations, pretty good things to pray for. If I don't walk into it presuming what she believes or how other people may misread it.
Sure.
Okay. I believe this is the hinge point.
I was just about to say that. It seems like it.
Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put their trust in you. As you told the nation yesterday, you have felt the providential hand of a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families who fear for their lives. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in our poultry farms and meatpacking plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shift in hospitals, they may not be citizens or have the proper documentation, but the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. They pay taxes and are good neighbors. They are faithful members of our churches, mosques and synagogues, gurdwara and temples. Have mercy, Mr. President, on those in our communities whose children fear that their parents will be taken away. Help those who are fleeing war zones and persecution in their own lands to find compassion and welcome here. Our God teaches us that we are to be merciful to the stranger, for we were once strangers in this land. May God grant us all the strength and courage to honor the dignity of every human being, speak the truth in love, and walk humbly with one another and our God for the good of all the people of this nation and the world. Now, I will say, I actually disagree with far less of this than a lot of my most conservative friends do. For example, they're gay, lesbian, and transgender children, Democratic, Republican, and independent families who fear for their lives. Do I think that the current, at least actions up to this point, should cause people fear for their lives? No. No, I don't. Are the winds changing politically on the expediency of what it means to live as a transgender person in the United States? Yes. Yeah, certainly. Mm-hmm. But that is not the same thing as fearing for your life. Should you continue to talk about these people, the impacted folks, with dignity? Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you totally should. To the extent that they have fears that are unfounded. Based upon the actions your administration intends to take, should you otherwise be explicit about that to calm unnecessary fear? Yes, I think you probably should. So now that isn't what this lady is getting at. I just know that contextually from other things that she's
advocating. Sure.
I believe she's a lesbian herself. And so I think that's not what she's getting at. But at its face, can I go, hey, they're afraid. Govern them and do so in a way that does not otherwise cause unnecessary fear. I actually think that's probably fine. Same thing. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in the poultry farms and meatpacking plants, who wash the dishes, blah, blah, blah. They may not be citizens or have the proper documentation, but the vast majority are immigrants or not criminals. It's actually, if you are not a citizen here and you came over illegally, you are actually
by definition a criminal.
How Christians should react to these folks, I actually think is a more complicated question than what's being represented here. Both can be true at the same time. You can have compassion on people who commit crimes. Hungry people who steal bread have my compassion. But maybe you don't decide to persecute those crimes or something like that. Like there's ways to think about it. But they are actually still criminals. They did commit a crime, and countries actually have a responsibility to keep law and order. And you can't just commit crimes and go, it's wrong to persecute or to otherwise react to the presence of crimes in your midst. Like that's not right. But should you do so, recognizing people have dignity and worth? Yes, you should.
I have a quick question, because I don't wade into the political side of a lot of things.
Yep.
Are most people upset that like immigrants are coming into this country and then using the services offered by this country as a resource problem? It's not just the fact that they're here, right? It's that they are using government healthcare, government subsidies, like that they are using, they'll go and ring up a hospital bill and then someone's got to pay it.
There are a few different contentions of various levels of, I think, accuracy. There one is the concern that there are folks coming in not legally and just subverting other people. Like it's just a matter of fairness. There are people who are waiting to get in. You're coming in and not waiting. And so it's just unfair. Two, that there are people who are coming in illegally and then they're using services. And there isn't a particular way, like you can't get the money back.
Yeah, they're not paying into the services they're using like everyone else is.
Yeah. Now, in some ways, I think that's actually a little bit unfair, because what's happening with some folks are, and this is a business problem, and they've tried to, other administrations have said, look, it's hard to catch individuals. We should just crack down on the businesses, because like they're the ones hiring workers. And so there are a lot of them who are like, we'll sign up and get work under a fake Social Security number. That Social Security number will actually have taxes taken out, and there's no way to file and get them back. And so there are plenty of people who are here working illegally who are paying into the system and have no way to actually, if they overpay taxes, they can't get it. They can't get it back. So I think there's that's more nuanced. I think you shouldn't think of all illegal immigrants as doing work and not paying taxes. That's true for some, but it's also the opposite is true for some. And then I think there are this belief that they are there is an influence in that shapes the political landscape. And this is where I think like the a bunch of Republicans were upset with the Reagan administration on saying allowing giving like amnesty to folks who are already here, because when the census is taken as an example, the census right now includes not just like citizens. So it says how many people live here, and some of the people live there could be illegal, like undocumented workers or illegal immigrants or something like that. And the consequence to that is the census drives what?
Services? Taxes?
Think higher. Think government makeup.
Oh, it changes like the people in power making decisions.
Yes. Yeah. It changes the number. Even if there's no like votes, even if you're not voting because you're here illegally or something like that.
Electoral college.
Exactly. It changes the number of folks in the House of Representatives coming from your state. It has the chance to start to swing.
Yeah,
some of
so
that
it
stuff.
Skews.
Yes.
It skews the level of who's in charge to be able to make decisions across the entirety of the United States.
Yeah. And that's not only just true at a federal level. There's ways in which that becomes true at the state level as well.
Yeah.
And so again, like there's a risk of an influence with folks who are actually not citizens here having some influence or power over how even our lawmaking or legislative processes are shaped. And so. And then you've got just the kind of the core problem, which is what Trump primarily campaigned on, which is around, look, there's just dangerous people coming in illegally, which is true. Like, and the problem is it's in some ways it's like the abortion debate, because like if you're pro-choice, you pick like the woman who's in a really rough position put that way by an idiot of a man who doesn't have a lot of options and like, what are you going to do? Force her to have the baby? Like, you find the most sympathetic part of that.
Sure.
And if you're on the pro-life position, you get the parts of the fetus torn apart and you go, look, how could you even, what's the matter with you? And you miss what is the combination of both of those things possibly being true at the same time. There for everything where, hey, there are people that work at the poultry farm and they're just trying to feed their family. Yeah. That's totally happening.
Right.
There are people who are like willing to risk everything they have to get their family from Guatemala, where they've got all kinds of problems, and to make the trek to America, the land of promise. Is that happening? Yeah, totally. In the same way, are there people who want the worst out of America? They want to sell drugs.
Yeah.
They want to do other illegal things like murder and rape and pillage. And like, did they come across illegally and then do those things? Yes, that happened too. And so, like what people are sick of is like, hey, we don't even have a way to vet any of these folks. We can't track. We don't know they're around. And so like, it's not even that you can't keep an eye on them or ask Mexico, hey, was this guy dangerous back there too? And so, that's kind of one of the big leading fears is that why would we just go, whoever, come on in. You could be terrorism, could be drugs, could be rapers and pillagers. And so, people are concerned about that. And I think where we get this wrong is we act like either one of those sides does not have a basis in reality when it does.
Right.
Either of those things can be true. Do we have them in the right proportion? Well, probably not. There's far fewer people who are raping and pillaging who are coming over than those who are doing so. But I mean, how many do you need to let in and feel like it's fine? And so anyway, like if I think about what she's praying for, she's misrepresented the situation slightly. They're not criminals. Well, they are if they came over illegally. But should you treat them with dignity because they're humans? Yeah, I think you probably still should.
Right.
And as Christians, what has to be true at the federal level on what it looks like to protect your country does not dictate to what you do personally. And so, if you want to send money because the United States isn't going to let them in, but you want to raise $1 billion and go down there and set up and care for and provide medical services to and food to folks who are stuck at the Mexican border, that's righteous. You should totally do that. You want to – Mike's proposal is like figure out a way where the government says, look, fine, you got a sponsor, dude.
Yeah.
Then sponsor it.
Vouch for him.
Yeah. You know, like – or and advocate that like that's a possibility that they, you know – You're willing to do that and take financial accountability for them and like report back to the government on how things are going or whatever it is, the things that we get okay with. So like, if you want to fight for that, then you should totally do that. But as a human beings, but I think it's a little bit duplicitous to act like that is always the same thing of which, either a government is capable of doing or should be able to do nationalistically, maybe distinct from what you are capable of doing as your own sovereign citizen who gets to help in any way they please.
Yeah, even in the simplest of terms, right? Let's say my wife says, hey, I'm going to cook dinner for our family of four. I'll make a little bit extra in case somebody stops by, like two extra people. And then 20 people show up at my house. And she goes, I'd really love to feed all these people. We don't have enough food for them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much I think that they deserve to food or be treated like we don't have it. we don't have that much food.
Yeah.
And so like, it sounds like it's being painted in a way that says, you know, a majority of the folks or a decent percentage of the folks are like, look, we don't think we should ever feed them. And like, no one's saying that, but like, we can't support you. It's the attic question where they give you one way to solve a problem.
That's right. I was just going
to
say that.
The only way to solve the problem is to have all 20 over for dinner. Otherwise, you don't love them. And like, that's not an accurate representation, right? Like if you'd sent a letter that said, we're having a hard time, be like, well, we could probably send you some money. I wonder if we could get you, a work closer to home or like the truth is even when you put it in following Jesus terms, that puts America as the only route to Jesus, right? Like there's entire cultures and generations that like loved Jesus in Guatemala, even in the suffering of it, you know? And so like, it's not a guarantee, you know, that like God is blessing people's entry into the heaven that is America, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is the difficulty,
is, yeah, it says there's only one way to answer this question. If you don't do it that way, that you're a heartless turd. And I actually, you know, I kind of wonder this. I know nobody likes this answer, but I feel like capitalism can solve this. You know where there's a lot of available workers? At the Mexican border. Why don't you go set up a factory down there? Where's that My Pillow guy? When I'm sure he needs a place to go make some pillows and and make a nice life right there at the border there. Now, here's the thing is like, I know why people want to come to America. But like, how do you affect change in other places so that America isn't the only America? And so I
is there people that we flat out won't let in here? Right? Like, if you go through the process of becoming an American citizen, you take the tests, you whatever, you wait the time. And like, I don't know what it is. I'm sure it's like 6 years or something ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
Like it takes forever. But that's the only difference. If you were to wait the 6 years, then you were in as long as you passed all the requirements. We're allowing an emergency to be created that says this needs to happen right now, even if you were to follow it. Yeah. Legally, you'd have been here.
Yeah, I think the reasons that we would keep people out are essentially like they were horrible in their own country, and we know that. And yeah. So we're not going to let them in as like active known criminals in plenty of violent and nonviolent situations.
But good folks who cause no trouble are still 6 years out. It's a time problem.
I think it's just a vetting out an amount of time to make certain that the people that we're allowing into the country legally and to be able to be have citizen status, all those things, and then all the things that come with that, it takes the time, and the people don't have that time.
Yeah.
They may be leaving a horrible situation in their own country. They may be leaving a horrible country to get out of the situation. They do not have, and potentially they don't have the resources to be able to get to the spot where they're waiting the years to do that kind of thing. I'm sure there's 1,000 reasons, but...
Yeah, and it's all complicated, and it's, you know, people are fleeing things that you would flee from.
Of like course,
you,
yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I think anybody that doesn't have a sympathy here is being heartless.
Agreed.
I don't...
Or purposely obtuse. Like, even logically, you're not even trying.
Yes. Yeah, agreed from that. And so, like, I've been disappointed to listen to a number of, Christians not reflect the heart of Jesus in how they talk about people.
Yeah, right.
I think that, and that's true even on the first paragraph of folk, the mm-hmm. lesbians and the transgenders, and like if you don't talk about people in a way that says I value and care about people the
right.
way Jesus values and cares about people, like I'm super disappointed in that. It doesn't mean though, like the places where people start to split politically, I don't know, there's a reason people split in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to be able to have conversations about those things. Still talking and recognizing that these are people involved. But like, again, I really liked the attic comparison because that one rings very close to me to recognizing that goes, you gave me, there's like 1,000 ways to help with this situation. And you said, I choose one or I suck.
Yeah,
that's
right. Right.
Like I get to stay at your place tonight. Not you'll give me a ride to the shelter. No, you suck. You don't even care about people. I want to stay in your living room. Like, I'm not sure why that is the only acceptable option here, and you're misrepresenting the situation by doing so. Sometimes I do let people stay in the living room, right? And but like I only have so much room in the living room.
And there's a wisdom and discernment to that.
Yes, and frankly, there's only so many living rooms. There's only so much space in the living rooms.
Yeah.
And so is that even a good long-term solution? Probably not. And can a guy who goes, look, I insist on staying in your living room. Mike, I'm pretty sure like within my extended family, like they've had people that they've let stay at their place. And then some tricky things have happened where like weird behavior around kids have occurred with people you allowed to stay in your basement or stay in your living room or something like that. That's the border. And like, is it 99% of people? No, I think that's foolish. But like. I mean, evil people take advantage of the spot of which where they can take advantage. And so, like, this isn't a so easy of a thing. And so I just think you're being unhelpful. But here's the thing. Can I recognize that this woman probably means one thing? Probably. Can I take the thing she said and goes, yeah, it's worth keeping in mind.
Yeah.
People are afraid. Got it. Yeah. I don't really want people to be afraid. However, there's places where we part company. And it doesn't threaten their ability to live as human beings. Now, here's the thing. In some places, they believe it. They believe it does.
Yes.
They believe some of these things, like I don't get to be who I am made to be. Understood.
And actually, you remember if we talked about this even right after the election occurred, as I said, that is actually one of the things where Christians need to double down, is people who felt isolated already are going to feel double so. And you need to be aware of that.
Yeah.
You love people, you still say true things, and you still, like, the gospel still is the good news, and you still need to invest in that. But, like, recognizing that how it hits people will be different.
Yeah.
And I would be aware of that. And so, anyway, I know that was, like, this is where it got turned. This is where he's like, well, that was nasty. I mean, and maybe she even intended it that way. I'm just saying, if I read it at face value, can I even agree to some of these things, like have mercy? Yeah. Yeah, I think you should have mercy. I think you should recognize when people of all stripes fear for their lives. Should I recognize, like, well, she was wrong about the criminal thing. We're just being dishonest to say that. But what do I do about the reality that there was criminalization here? Well, again, I would still have mercy in there. I would still do your best to keep families together. Do your best to recognize that, like, give people all the resources they can to come in the right way. Be truthful with them. It's probably going to take you 6.5 years. Here's where we found other people have success at the border. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so, I know not everyone's going to like those answers, but again, you can't give us the addict's choice that says you only have do it one way or it's no way. That's not, that's manipulation. That's not right.
Yeah. There's a difference between having mercy on a group of people and, cheapening the truth and what love actually is in their lives.
Yes.
And I think that very easily in what I see in that last paragraph could be misconstrued based off of not knowing much, to be honest, about the person and you know where they're coming from. But from my experiences in any of these realms, the request that would be have mercy on me or love me is actually disguised them asking for my willingness to just accept them in their lies and brokenness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I refuse to do.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. So anyway, I just there's two avocations here. I think the first one is if you get your news primarily from reactions of people onto Facebook, I think you should stop. This was very valuable for me to read. I generally read something. Okay, what can I agree with? Well, I can agree with most of this, actually. Even the most controversial parts, I think I can agree with still. It probably doesn't mean what she intended it to mean, but if I took the words at face value, I think mercy still applies in places. In these places, I think thoughtfulness, recognition of the value of humans and humanity. Yeah, I can get on board with all that stuff. I just don't think it implies some of the political things that she believes it does. But there, now we have the crux of the conversation. Let's get over some of the places where it feels like we're saying people aren't human beings and aren't worth treating with dignity and value that God bestowed upon them. No, okay. Let's get past that then, and let's try to solve problems that otherwise recognize that, but don't always mean what you think it means. And I don't have any problems saying that. I'll have a problem saying it out loud. I wouldn't have any problem standing in a group of the most conservative Christians that I know and going, I agree with 99% of these things this woman said.
Yeah.
But it does not mean the three things that you're the most worried about.
Right.
But
right.
But if we can't affirm some of these things that I think scripturally that they point me to, then I actually think that's a problem. And so that's where I'm saying, don't allow people's presumptions to ruin your witness. Don't allow people's perversion of God's word to keep me from affirming it, even in ways it puts me in some territory of which I heck might even hold hands with this person. And so I think it's a fear thing, and I would just be cautious about it. But then, like, call things for what they are. No, it doesn't mean that we're going to affirm a thing that Jesus says not to affirm. No, it doesn't mean I have to accept that there's only one way that this is true in our relationship. Okay. All right. Anyway, I thought that was helpful. Thank you, guys. I know that ended up being pretty long, but I appreciate you walking through it. Just be cautious. If you disagree, hit us up on the complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text, and I'd love to hear your feedback there.
Hey, I know we were going to do my things. Can we bail on those for this week so I can talk to Dan about them next week, too?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We'll hit them up. We'll make sure Dan's here for those two Ask the Pastor items. Mike, let's do some quick advice.
Not saying I don't want to hear from you fellas, too. I would like to hear Dan's thoughts on it, too.
Dear Life from the Path. We share a vacation home with another family. My husband and I are neat people. The other family is the opposite. They leave dirty dishes in the sink for days, promising I'll get to them. Dirty diapers are left on the living room floor as well as toys, clothes, and stale food. It's disgusting. Ooh. My husband and I clean up after them, but it's gotten out of hand. We can't invite friends over unless we spend hours cleaning up after them. I don't want to cause tension between the families, but something has to be done. How do we confront them?
Oh, boy.
How'd you end up being vacation friends with these people?
Yeah, didn't you know that beforehand?
I was going to say, that's a rough time to find out about someone being willing to leave dirty diapers on the floor. If I take it at face value and everything that this person is saying is absolutely true and there's no tinge of like, you're a neat freak and that's why it feels like everything is gross.
Yeah.
Okay. If they're actually that gross, I would seriously have a conversation with them about like being like they need to buy or this needs to be a real like coming to Jesus moment about this because that's disgusting. Hmm. Like leaving dirty dishes in the sink of a place that you share with somebody. And like dirty diapers on the living room floor, that's gross. That's real bad.
I mean, are you imagining like face down turd turd blanket?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Is like, has it been 2 minutes? And like they haven't picked it up yet because they're still sitting on the floor. The kid's in a clean diaper now. They just haven't taken it to the diaper genie in the corner of the house. Like, yeah. Those are two different things. But like, if I take it at face value, this is as disgusting as you're making it seem like. How do you have the conversation? Boldly.
Yeah.
Boldly have that conversation. Go, there is no realm of human understanding that says that the way that you're living in a communal space that we both own is acceptable.
I had a couple follow-up questions that I don't think they're going to answer, but like, are you at like some very different stages of life? Because they're like,
right.
My husband and I are clean people. And then they describe this scene where it's like parents and kids and, you know, like young kids.
Yeah. These, are you retiree in their 30s?
Yeah. Cause like, I mean, you got to have some grace for some new parents and for some young kids. You get kids grow up to be five till they're about five. They're feral, man. Like they be pooping. After. I mean, they just, you got a sliding scale of priorities and one is to keep everybody alive.
That's true. Yes.
And then you're like, man, the diaper's on the floor. You're like, got to hold, man. We got the kids trying to eat a spatula.
Nobody's on fire, but there are dishes in the sink. Okay. Priorities.
Yeah. Some tells me that you are like on in different walks of life and like, very it just, possibly, you do not have, it doesn't take very long to have some older kids and you forget what it's like to have a 3-year-old tooling around the place. Tearing the place up and where you were gracious and full of compassion for a 3-year-old when you had one, by the time your kids are now 16, you're like, that little turd has taken everything off this piano that was sitting there just behaving itself for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And this terror ain't been in here but 3 minutes. And you're like, that kid is a terrible kid. And you're like, he's not a terrible kid. He's just three.
Yeah.
You know, and like you just forgot because you got so used to not having a 3-year-old in there. And so part of me thinks that like if I'm reading too far into this, that I think you're just,
no, I think that's fair,
stages of life where you forgot what it's like to have. I mean, I found some rogue diapers underneath the couch, probably been there a week or two just because they got kicked under there and you didn't know. And you're like, oh, man, that is unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
That's it. No other follow up.
No.
Boova says, they need a big come to Jesus. I'm like, you guys need to calm down.
If I can take it at face value of what they're saying is true, come to Jesus boldly. If you're probably in the situation where you're a neat freak and therefore any level of not neatness is taken as just a moral offense against the religion of the world, like maybe you need to take a step back and see the truth of the matter. Like, yes, that sucks. There's a crappy situation, and if there is dishes in the sink for days, if they told you they were going to get to it and still didn't, that does suck. There's some grace that you can have in the situation, but it doesn't mean get walked on in this. Like, you've confronted them, and they said they were going to do a thing, which means they recognized that it should have been done.
Yeah.
Is this,
but they didn't.
Is this normal that you end up being a co-vacation family? Weird. With a family you don't even know? This is not like your son.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And his wife, like, right?
I mean, it could be telling of the situation if they talk about their familial relationship like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels weird. It feels like neighbors that live in two houses up in Oklahoma, now down in Tallahassee, share a vacation home together.
That's weird.
That feels weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Secular says, dirty dishes are annoying. Dirty diapers left on the living room floor are a health hazard.
Oh.
You are not going to change these slobs. You didn't mention whether you rent or own this vacation home. If you own it, sell your half and get out of there. If you rent, reconsider your choice of getaways because this is making your vacation anything but a vacation.
Boy, they just went right with, hey, there's no way to resolve this problem.
They're slobs and it's not your fault. Yeah. Get out.
Leave directly. That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, that...
No reconciliation, friends. Get on out.
Yeah.
Buy the house next door and make that one look fancy.
Yeah, that... Boy, I don't know. That seems strong.
It really does.
They didn't be like, hey, you should have a talk to them or whatever. They're just like...
They're a health hazard, those slobs.
Yeah.
That's pandering to the person asking.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's too much. All right, let's do one more.
Okay, hold on. Here it is. No, that's no good.
I was going to say, this means here it is means he has not vetted it out yet. And okay. Could be walking into a real doozy.
Dear Live from the Path, a close friend whom I've been urging for years to save for a rainy day is now facing a very real storm. She was diagnosed with breast cancer and is undergoing treatment. Knowing her financial situation, living paycheck to paycheck despite her and her husband's high-paying jobs, I felt compelled to help by setting up a GoFundMe. I have been managing updates on her journey, but the truth is, she has always been impulsive with money, spending bonus checks on gambling, cruises, fancy restaurants, and vacations, rather than building a safety net. Now, with this diagnosis, her past spending habits are coming back to haunt her. Many friends and family, knowing her history, are reluctant to donate.
Mm-hmm.
It's heartbreaking to see her struggle, but in spite of her illness, she still indulges in these expensive habits, despite needing to save every penny. I've tried talking to her, but she's in a fragile state physically and emotionally. I feel conflicted. On one hand, I want to support her through this difficult time. On the other, I can't condone her continued spending.
Yeah.
I'm now planning to distance myself from the GoFundMe because it feels dishonest to beg for donations for someone who won't prioritize her own financial recovery. What do you think, Life from the Path? How do I balance my friendship with my moral compass?
I mean, I don't think your friendship is rooted in this GoFundMe.
Yeah, I mean, if you feel like you got to back away from it, I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why you started in the first place.
Yeah,
that agreed. Seemed bold.
Yeah.
Yeah, that did seem like a... I mean, I get it. You seem like the type that is trying to help people, somewhat help people to look more like you in all situations,
yeah.
And being honest about that. But regardless, in the face of a cancer diagnosis, you felt helpful when you were helpless and not being able to do anything, so you created GoFundMe. I get that. I totally understand why you'd want to back away. It makes plenty of sense, and I think that's totally fair.
Yep.
Like this lady is willingly accepting these donations while also not changing anything about her habits, potentially going on expensive trips, gambling. I mean, I doubt that's all happening still. She just got diagnosed with breast cancer. It's potentially in a situation where she's receiving some kind of chemotherapy or whatever. But like, I don't know. You may be hitting it kind of hard into this. Like if she's still spending wildly, as in going to the store. She just got diagnosed with breast cancer, so she's not giving that up. Like, I can understand why she's not. But I totally get why you are saying you need to distance yourself. And I think it's disingenuous on your part if you were to continue it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if she's gambling with the GoFundMe money.
Yeah, right. That's automatically no, shut it
then
down.
You should.
And tell everyone that it happened.
Yeah.
And deal with the recompense.
But I think it is not really appropriate to go, hey, this person did not save for a rainy day. Do they really deserve to have everyone come in and bail them out right now?
Right.
I mean, that's everybody. Like, vast majority of the world functions under this particular deal. Because, like, who can really plot for breast cancer? And I also submit to you, I remember thinking about this. There's all kinds of stuff where, like, hey, you should save. What if this situation happens? And these situations were like, I could have been a diligent saver for 20 years, and this meant nothing.
Yeah.
I think that about my kid's education.
3 months.
Yeah. You could have saved your kid for college. I'm like, what the heck ever? Like $5,000 a month, and then eventually I might be able to pay for these children?
In the face of a cancer diagnosis, your putting away money for a rainy day would have been like grabbing one towel in the middle of a monsoon.
Yeah.
And then the second you go out in the monsoon, you get drenched wet and then use the towel and you dry off. But then nothing changed about the monsoon and you're back out it. You go, oh, crap. I had the one towel that I saved.
Yeah.
Frickin' 50 grand in the face of a legit cancer diagnosis is a joke.
You just will have a
that's
Lincoln on you.
6 months worth of your treatments.
Yeah.
It's just not. There's no amount of saving.
Like, the thing is
Twig insurance.
Sometimes people, like, they want to help you, right? And, like, problem is, like, if you're going to help generously, you can't be all that attached on exactly what that money is doing,
mm-hmm.
right? You either, like, want to help in a way that has... You know, that it's going to have $20, give them to them. And you're like, well, they're just going to gamble with it. Well, then if you're worried about it in that kind of way, then you shouldn't give them the $20, right? Like I had somebody, like when we were, when I had lost my job, they gave us gift cards, right? To go to the store and buy whatever I want, you know?
Yeah.
And so like they never followed up to ask what I had bought, whether it was Ho-Ho's or steak or, right. you know, hamburger helper.
Did you buy only broccoli?
Right. Did you, were you, you know, did you buy only the store brand or were you buying expensive steak fries like Ore-Ida's and living high on the hog on my hundo that was supposed to be helping you? They never asked one time where that money went. Right.
Yep.
And so I think like, as far as all that goes, I don't have any problem with you leaving that GoFundMe up and I don't have any problem with people donating it. And the people that don't want to, cause they know how she operates, then they don't, you know, and then that's okay. I don't know that there's this big dishonesty in there. You know, do I think you should be gambling with the GoFundMe amount, money? I don't. But if like, if some of that money was to be able to help you go on a vacation and part of that vacation equaled that you were on a cruise and they had a casino there and you dropped $20 on it, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't feel like I need to defend myself in any way, but I'm not 100% certain how GoFundMe works. If it sounded like I was saying you should shut the GoFundMe down, I'm not saying that. Just back away from it yourself. Give the login to somebody else. Just in case it sounded like I was saying they should never receive help from anybody else. I just mean maybe you shouldn't be the admin of it. That's what I mean by that.
Yeah, if it bothers you, then get out of it.
Back away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Segular says, I think you should separate yourself from the GoFundMe project you started. As a good friend, you can continue supporting this woman emotionally, but you are not required to promote her getting money. If a recipient uses donated funds for a purpose other than what they are intended, it could be considered fraud. Yeah, I suppose it depends on how you're representing that GoFundMe money. If you're like, this is going directly towards treatment, you know, then
this goes in the hands of the cancer treatment center.
Yeah, which, I mean, who would want to donate to that?
I don't
know.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, right, yeah.
I don't want you to, let's say that it's your days and like cancer's not going very well for you. I don't want you to turn around and pay the hospital.
Right, true. Right. I want you to be able to use that money and like take your kids on a real quick trip.
Yeah, do something cool with it. Don't be giving Hopkins no cash.
Right. Yeah. Fix up your place.
All right, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us here. We very much appreciate it. Thanks for staying with the show here in 2025. If you had a New Year's resolution to spend your time better, thanks for dropping that, Phelan, already, and listen to us here on the program. If you got any feedback for us, hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text 515-517-0085. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll see how the days bring, but we should be in the back in the saddle again next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.